The Australian Fitness Podcast is for anyone interested in understanding fitness, training, health, wellness, nutrition, and all things about health optimization. I interview experts from many different backgrounds, skill sets, and career paths. This is a podcast which provides valuable insight for anyone wanting to know more about optimizing their health and learning from those that have dedicated their careers and sometimes their lives doing so. Australian Fitness Podcast, episode 60, and I'm back in the house with one of my good friends, Craig Harper. Craig's been on the show multiple times before, and I made life pretty hard for him during this episode, but some terrific knowledge and advice came out of it. So what I did, the format of the show is I sat down and I wrote down 10 of the most frequently asked questions that get posed to me about health, training, nutrition, exercise and physical performance, improving elements of all of those things. So I wrote down some of the 10 most common questions I get asked, and I posed them to Craig, and I gave him a time limit, which made him work really hard because he has such an enormous amount of information and knowledge. It's really hard for him to pin down, you know, sort of the key concepts in a short space of time because there's so many ways that you can answer the question and be correct as well. So the episode is those 10 questions with a time limit of 3 minutes per question, no more. So it really makes him work really hard. It's quite funny. I could see the sort of wheels turning and the frustration sometimes when he was trying to get his answer across succinctly, but he knew there was so many other elements to his, you know, to his answer, but he had to get it done in 3 minutes. So it was a great episode, great fun. So enjoy it. The 10 most commonly asked questions, and the episode is entitled "It Depends." So that will become evident once you listen to the episode. Enjoy this one because I certainly did. Australian Fitness Podcast. We're going to the House of Harper today. The House of Craig Harper. I'm going to put this episode up on my YouTube channel. I don't with all of them, but this one I'm going to, and simply for the mere fact that Craig's going to, we're going to look at Craig's unruly haircut.
Well, that's very unfair. Like, you didn't even tell me that. In fact, all you did was bag the shit out of me before we went live, you told me that my hair looked like crap.
I set you up.
Sure shit. Your shit. I hope no one listens or watches. I'm not going to try. That's it. I'm not trying. Nah. You know what? But I was telling you, and I'll tell the listeners, is that all my mates go, "That looks like shit. Shave it off. What are you doing, mate? You look stupid." And the girls are like, "Oh, no, it's really curly. Let it grow. That's good. Like, just see what happens. It looks good long."
Yeah.
My mum goes, "It softens your face. It makes you less hard."
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Oh, dear. No, well,
anyway,
it's fair to say that with your hair, you're going to polarize people, and that's okay. You've never shied away from that in the past, have you, mate?
Mate, I seem to be a polarizing figure. But anyway,
well,
Paul Callery, the great Paul Callery that you and I both know, said to me in about second year uni 100 years ago, he said to me, "Mr. Harper," he said, what did he say? "If you don't want anyone," he said, "if you want everyone to like you and nobody to dislike you, then say nothing, do nothing, stand for nothing and be nothing." Like, in other words, if you don't want to piss anybody off, don't have an opinion about anything.
Yeah.
And don't stand for anything. And it's like, I think, you know, and I know this is not the conversation, but the reality is, you know, if 10 people hear one opinion, there's not going to be 10 people in agreement. So, and once you have, you know, we're kind of on my show, we're around 10,000 listens a day. So of course, just statistically, even if it's 1%, there's 100 people that think you're a moron every day.
Yeah.
And it's probably more than that. So and not only do they think I'm a moron, quite often I agree with them.
Mm.
I hate listening to myself.
Mm.
I hate listening to my own podcasts, and they must be okay because people keep coming back. But do you hate the sound of your own voice or the
Oh, well, it's like you've said to me before, no one actually realizes what they sound like until they actually record themselves on an audio file and then play it back, because that's exactly what you sound like to other people. But no one actually hears their voice, I don't believe, the way it actually sounds. And unless you're Chris Hemsworth, who has the deepest, bloody, most velvet voice in the world, you know, unless you sound like Chris Hemsworth, most other voices parallel into insignificance, don't they?
Oh, Morgan Freeman's got him covered, but we'll give him a close second.
Yeah,
but we love
right.
Morgan. But
Morgan Freeman could he could narrate the phone book and sound good, couldn't he?
Oh yeah. Oh, he could insult me and I'd fucking love it. You know, you're a piece of shit. Thank you, Morgan. I mean, but also this inability that we have to understand what we sound like to the rest of the world also extrapolates into my research, which is really just understanding what the Craig or the Russell experience is like, not just auditorily, but sociologically, you know, for everyone. And I think that it's a really good, it's a really good thing to think about, is that the only person that lives in your head and hears your voice the way that you do is you. That's not good or bad, right or wrong, embarrassing or great. It's just the human experience. And that's why, whenever you were, most of us, it was on a tape recorder, us old people, it was on a tape recorder in the 70s, where you listen to your voice and you go, what's that? I don't sound like that. And everyone else goes, what do you mean? You sound exactly like that. So you kind of go, oh, maybe, you know, Aeneas Nin, who was a writer in the early 20th and late 19th century, said, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And that extrapolates out to pretty much everything.
I'll tell you, here's an interesting little, when you talk about audio files and listening to voices. When I was in grade 5 or 6, I remember it distinctly because I've still got it. When I was in grade 5 or 6, I had to do like a little assignment for, it was either a sort of a history subject or a humanities type subject. It was, and the assignment we were given was interview a parent or a grandparent about their experience as, you know, growing up. So I interviewed my dad and I had to record it. And my dad passed away when I was 19, and I've still got the audio file of when I interviewed him, and I was 10 or 11, and I'm now 53. So it's a 40-ish year old recording of his voice. Geez, it's good to listen to.
Have you kind of got that digitally recorded anywhere?
No, I haven't. No, I've got it.
You should definitely do that, dude. That's absolutely priceless.
Yeah, you're right. I'll do that. Now, this is the Australian Fitness Podcast, so we're going to talk fitness. And I did kind of pre-warn you a little bit this morning when we spoke, and I said, I'm gonna do a very short Q&A, and I'm gonna put you on a time limit. And I only do that, mate, because with all of the knowledge that sits in your head, sometimes you do get wound up, and you can, I think the words that you use become a little verbose. But I mean that politely.
I resemble that, Russell.
So, Craig, for the rest of the show, I've got 10 questions for you. You don't know what these questions are, so you're going to have to answer them completely honestly, and you won't have time to prepare any kind of if buts, or in this situation, answers, right? It's just straight from the head and heart. I want you to tell us exactly
Can I ask one thing? Not what are the questions, but what are they? Are they all in the exercise space?
Yep, they're all, well,
okay.
Yes, they're all in the exercise training space. Now, for the listeners to the Australian Fitness Podcast, you've heard Craig speak before, you know Craig's background, but I won't expand on it now. Suffice to say that he is an expert both in academically and experientially in this field. So the answers to the questions you're going to hear are based on academic understanding and experiential learning and businesses and training and so forth over the last 35 plus years. So you're an authority. What I'm trying to say here is you're an authority. So we need to listen to what you say. So question one, you've got 3 minutes, and I'll put my stopwatch on. Okay. So why do people in general.
Hang on. When does the 3 minutes start?
From the
when you talk or when I talk?
The moment you start speaking, brother, I'm putting the clock on, right?
I've got a clock here too.
Oh, Jesus. What, we're gonna fight over stopwatches. Why do people, when I say people, I mean male and female, still feel intimidated by regular gyms, and where are we getting this wrong, as in gym owners and gym operators? Because people still do. But why? Why do they still feel intimidated to walk into a gym? Go.
Well, I think some people do and some people don't. So not everyone that goes to a gym is intimidated, but let's talk about the ones that are. So I don't think there's a single thing, but I think, you know, it's for some people, it's obviously they have self-esteem issues or body image issues or, you know, being in public issues, and that belief, be it real or erroneous, that people are looking at them and evaluating them and judging them and labeling them, when in truth, most people in most gyms are pretty much into themselves and their own stuff, right? I know I am. When I'm in a gym, I'm not scoping the gym and evaluating. I'm doing my thing. I'm lifting my shit. I'm listening to a podcast maybe. I'm thinking about what's going on today, but I'm pretty in my own little world. And my experience is that most people are in their own little world. But I think also, Rusty, et al., I think that some gyms are not great cultures and some gyms are not great environments to be in. And I think that there are some gyms, some training facilities that are very well equipped. So, you know, on a fundamental level of, do they have lots of great resources and equipment, and do they have what I need to get done, what I need to or want to get done with my body? That's tick, tick. But then is this a place I like to be?
Mm.
Do I like the energy here? Do I feel well received? Do I feel accepted? Do people acknowledge me? Do I feel valued? Do people talk to me? Do people remember my name? Do they use my name? It's like, I think it's a multitude of things. And you and I have been doing this for a long time. And I started working in gyms in 1982. I set up my first gym in 1990. And, you know, the truth is that we're always having people come into the space who are intimidated and uncomfortable and, you know, unsure and uncertain. And those are all things that humans don't like. So as well as, you know, the task of helping people train their body to create the outcomes they want, which is on a physiological level, but also, you know, and this is what a lot of trainers don't get and gym owners don't get, a lot do, but a lot don't, is you also have to have a space, an environment, a culture where people like to come.
Yeah.
You know, and if somebody is uncomfortable mentally or emotionally to come to a venue, irrespective of whether or not you got 10 PhDs rolling around the gym floor or $1 trillion worth of equipment.
20 seconds.
Yeah, so I think it's not one thing but many things.
Okay, beautiful. Good answer. Question number two, do superfoods really exist, or is it simply a flashy marketing term? Go.
Right. Now, superfoods is literally a marketing term. That is literally what it is. There's no such thing as superfoods. There's food, there's nutrition, there's, you know, there's fruit, there's vegetables, there's seeds, there's legumes, there's meat, there's fish, there's, you know, that superfoods is a term that's been used to sell people on certain things. Now, but what there is that there's a hierarchy of nutritional value. So we were talking before we came live, and well, at one end of the scale, if we're talking about, here's a really easy one to understand. And our mutual friend Paul Taylor talks about essentially that breakfast cereals are analogous to candy or to sugar, confectionery, right? And so at one end of the scale, we might have, you know, Cocoa Pops or Frosty Flakes or fucking Fruit Loops or whatever we want to call them. And like breakfast, it's the breakfast of champions. It's the start of the day. It's the most important meal and all that. Also not true, by the way. All the meals are important. But in terms of, you know, what's more important is are there foods that have got a higher nutritional bang for your buck per unit of energy? And the answer is yes. So I can have 500 calories of crap, like 500 calories of lollies, or I can have 500 calories of organic fruit, veggies, and meat if I want. So there are some foods that, you know, a lot of antioxidants get thrown around as superfoods, and generally it's something that's been discovered in the last 12 minutes in some Amazonian jungle or something. But for the most part, the term superfoods is a sales pitch and a marketing idea. And you've got to remember that marketing's not bad, by the way. You know, when I do my workshops and seminars, when I write a book, when we have marketing, but marketing is psychology.
Yeah.
You know, the word superfoods is, you know, it's a psychological construct. It's somebody came up with that idea and went, fuck, that sounds great. Let's use that. Mm-hmm. It's like supercharge your brain with omega-3, supercharge your brain with, you know, nootropics, which are allegedly brain enhancers. Like all of this stuff is just jargon to sell stuff. And you got to remember, like on the front of whatever it is that you're going to potentially buy, the pack, the can, the box, the front is marketing, the back is information. If you actually want to know the information, turn that box around or that can or that packet and have a look at the tiny, tiny box in the bottom right usually, and it'll tell you what's actually in there, because that's just information, whereas the front is just a sales pitch.
Perfect. With 5 seconds to spare. Perfect answer. I love it. Well done. Righto. Question 3. One for the younger males. The 6 best exercises in your opinion for building muscle mass or hypertrophy. For a beginner sure. male. No, the 6 best in your opinion. It's your opinion.
You're an idiot. You're an idiot. All right. Well, okay. 3 minutes. Really, bro?
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's go with deadlifts. Let's go with squats. Let's go with chins. Let's go with bench. Mm-hmm. I'll qualify that. By the way, bench press is a multitude of variations.
Yep.
Deadlift, squats, chins, bench press. Let's chuck in a shoulder press. There are a million variations of that.
Yep.
And also just in terms of building a big, thick motherfucker back, bent over rows.
Okay.
Now that's completely question without notice.
Yeah,
I know. I may have forgotten something, but that's just how do I, and they're all compound multi-joint movements. So what we're trying to do is move as much weight as we can, as safely as we can. So we don't injure ourselves, but you know, like for example, when you're doing chins, you're doing biceps. When you're doing any pressing movement, you're doing triceps, you know, and even when you're doing your bench press, you're still working your delts, right? When you do your deadlifts, you're working your entire lower body, and people go, there's no specific abs or lower back. Well, deadlifts are lower back, but you know, your abs are activated the whole time. So they're either working, you know, directly or indirectly anyway. Yep. So, but the key with growth is too, let's do those compound movements and let's train, you know, let's David Goggins it. Let's train as hard as we can while not being a maniac.
Yep.
Now, and that means to, you know, we talk about rate of perceived exertion or perceived rate of exertion or whichever it is these days. You know, in other words, how hard you think you're working. And you and I have spoken about this. I believe that most people in most gyms who think they're working at 8 are working closer to 4.
Yep.
That's not very popular to say, don't care. Just because I've trained so many people and I ask them how hard they think they're working and they give me a score, and then I'll take them 1 minute later through something which is comprehensively harder and they'll do it.
Yep.
And they'll do it because I've told them that I believe they're not working at the level they think they are. And that's a compliment, right? It means I think you've actually got way more strength and ability than you're currently tapping into.
Yep.
So if you can't do this, you can't, but just do one thing for me. Give me 100% for one set. Don't overthink it and let's see what happens. And generally they surprise themselves.
You've got a stopwatch with you as well, haven't you? Because I'm like, you finish like almost to the second. Good answer. Yeah, well, the last two questions, you've finished with three or 4 seconds to spare. Have you got a stopwatch in front of you?
You just want me to go over time so you can go, time!
Yeah! I'm waiting to jump on you. Right, question 4. doing beautifully. Question four. You're not going to like this one, but I don't care. Supplements. Supplements. Overrated or underrated? Go.
Oh, dear. Supplements. See, again, a slippery slope. And it's like going, what do you think of humans? Well, there are shit humans and great humans. It's like, as a rule, you know, take them or leave them. Some of them I love. Some of them, nah.
Not so much.
Look, supplements are, you know, okay. Supplements can be valuable when you are lacking whatever that thing is. Now, a supplement doesn't have to be a bodybuilding supplement or something you get from a sports sup store per se. A supplement can be vitamin C. Mm. A supplement could be some omega-3s. It could be some antioxidants. So it's really about whether or not that person needs that. Now, the thing about supplements and nutrition and training and sleep and hydration and recovery more broadly, the thing is that there is no number. There is no set protocol or no set recipe or formula or prescription, which you and I, let's say you and I both had PhDs in nutritional science, right?
Yep.
We still can't sit here and tell people what they should take because we've never met them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't matter. It's like, well, let's do an evaluation. Let's take some blood. Let's see what you're lacking. And let's try and first fix it with diet because that's a good place to get, you know, vitamins and minerals. And then if we can't, like for someone like me, I have a thing called pernicious anemia, which means I don't absorb iron very well. So I take a B12 shot in the bot. Hmm. It's a shot in the bot every 2 weeks. And that takes me from feeling like rubbish to feeling pretty good in about 1 day, right? Now, so for me with that, well, that's a great supplement.
Yeah.
That's a great supplement because it helps me. But, you know, if I get enough protein in my diet, which I do, then shoveling protein powder in my gob every 3 hours is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Shoveling, you know, creatine, monohydrate or phosphate or whatever it is into my body on a regular basis may or may not help. All it is really is a cell volumizer. It works for about 4 in 5 on a level, but even the research is out on that. But interestingly, I read something the other day that says that creatine monohydrate, this was a legit scientific paper, in fact, 3 of them, creatine is also a nootropic, so it helps brain function. Again, don't take that as gospel from me, just what I read.
Mm-hmm.
But the answer is, the quick answer is, can be helpful depending on what you need, but don't think that taking vitamin or supplement, whatever, is going to, in inverted commas, make you big. What's going to make you big is train awesome, sleep awesome, eat awesome.
Perfect. The other one. Nailed it. Question 5. We're going beautifully. We're on time. Is cardiovascular training going to damage or detract from my attempts to build muscle hypertrophy? Go.
Yes and no. It can. It depends on what the cardio training.
Get off the fence. Get off the fence, mate.
The fucking hell, son. It's not that clear, right? Hey, hey. You want, I'm not giving you a yes or no answer because it depends on what the cardio is. So
yeah,
this is how I explain this to people. I'm not explaining it to you because you know, right? I go, all right, so let's talk about running. Some people go, running good or bad? I go, well, depends how you run.
Mm-hmm.
I go, describe to me a marathon runner. And they go, well, he's maybe 5 foot, like talk to me about one of the best in the world. He or she's maybe 5'7", 6",
mm-hmm.
and weighs, if it's a dude, maybe 55 kilos, lady, maybe 45 kilos. Okay, now describe to me the fastest man slash woman on earth. Okay, dude, 6'2", 6'3". 98 Ks, built like a fucking superhero. Now describe the lady. Well, the lady, she's maybe 68 to 72 or 3 kilos. She's jacked. She's strong. She's a powerhouse, right? They both run. They all run. They're all runners, right?
Yep.
So there's a cost. There's a cost that comes. Oh, I forgot to start my stopwatch, Rusty. You'll be able to shout me down.
No.
Shit.
1:17.
All right, so there's a cost, and that is, if I run too much, yes, there's going to be a muscle cost.
Mm.
So what we're trying to do is maintain cardiovascular fitness, while maintaining muscle mass. So you look at rugby league players, AFL players who do it pretty well, just as an example, mm-hmm. and girls and guys, right? Is that they do a lot of strength training. A lot of them also, especially the rugby league and union dudes, are pretty genetically suited. But they do, but the cardio work that they do is generally interval type stuff, shorter, harder, decent recovery. And the old days of doing like 5K time trials, as a rule, don't happen anymore because it tells you nothing other than how well someone runs 5Ks.
Yep.
So bottom line is the right cardio will help you. What do I think you should do? Just broadly speaking, not a prescription, shorter, harder. You know, at the moment I've upped my cardio from 3Ks of walking a day, which I didn't realize how little I walked, to 10.
Right.
So every day I'm walking 70Ks a week at the moment.
Wow. 30 seconds.
And, you know, the cardio that I do is if I do run, which is sporadically run, so sometimes I'll do 3 days a week, then I'll do none for a month. But my runs are literally 1 to 2 Ks, running for me quite fast, which is about, for me, I say, 57-year-old me, 4.5 minute Ks.
Yep.
So 2 Ks, 9 minutes, I get home, I'm absolutely shagged. But the cardio benefits are great, but I'm only running for 9 minutes, so I'm not sacrificing muscle.
Time. Beautiful. All right, going well. Question 6. How do I write? Okay, so I've written this. How do I manage my nutrition for optimal sort of results, and why can't I seem to get it right? Now, this is a sort of a common question from people in my gym or people that come and talk to me. They don't really seem to be able to get their nutrition on point. They struggle with the structure and the discipline. What's your advice? What's your guidance? What's your take on helping people to get their nutrition on point?
So I wrote a book a few years ago, which I'm definitely not selling, called Pull Your Finger Out, terrible title, good book. And one of the chapters in that book was called Conscious Eating. And so everyone has a relationship with food, and some of us have a healthy relationship. Some of us have a tempestuous on again, off again, I hate you, fuck off, you're a bitch relationship. And some of us, it's really toxic. And you know me really well, and you know my backstory. And so even though I was, when I was, you've seen me at probably 80 kilos, Rusty, and you've probably seen me at 110 or 15, right?
Yep.
Now, it wasn't because I didn't understand nutrition or I didn't know what to do or I stopped training or because I was undisciplined or because I was a dummy. It was because I had a really unhealthy relationship with food and I was out of control. And so, you know, it's like when people say to me, you know, how do I stop eating chocolate, for example? I got asked that very recently. How do I stop eating chocolate? I go, one, you don't go to the joint that sells the chocolate. Two, you don't buy the chocolate at that joint. Three, you don't bring it home. And four, you don't put it in your mouth. Ta-da, right? Because, like, this is not an accident. Like, this is a conscious process.
Yep.
Like you are choosing to do it. So my better question is not how do I, the question is why don't you, mm-hmm. right? So, and the reason that we don't is because while we like the idea of changing our habits and our body and eating clean and being lean and operating in a better state, this is one of the reasons anyway, is that chocolate tastes fucking amazing, right? That's, and we love instant gratification. So, the funny thing, when I talk to people about food, very rarely these days do I talk about micros and macros, and the same with you, I'm sure. It's like, yeah, I can write you, in inverted commas, the best diet, although that's not my job, but let's say we get the best dietitian in Australia and he or she writes you the best diet. Well, that's worth fuck all unless you're going to execute it and consistently over the next, or a version of that. Let's say it's the ideal diet for you and for your physiology and genetic disposition, it works, right?
Yep.
It gives you optimal performance and function and health and all that shit that you want. Well, that's not the answer. That's just the map. The answer is you.
Yeah.
Like the answer is, will you do that? And the answer truly for many people is no, I won't, but I love the idea. Because we, you know, we don't like hard stuff. And changing your operating system around food and not bullshitting yourself around food and being real and honest and self-aware and owning up and stepping up is hard.
Five seconds. It's hard,
but it's not complicated.
Okay. It's hard. I'll tell you what's hard. It's hard for you to answer a question in 3 minutes when I've seen you do a three-hour seminar on the same question. Hey, go on, mate. It's exhausting.
I can't even sip my coffee. And for all the people, can I suggest that nobody watches this on YouTube because I'm suggesting it wouldn't be a pretty sight? That's all right.
Oh, no, I just like watching you really work hard because normally you unpack this stuff over 3 hours and I made you unpack it over 3 minutes. But you know what? It's good. It's good because it's to the point and you're nailing it. Right. Hang on a second. I've just got to get my next question. My next question is one for the older listeners. If I'm above 50, how many times a week should I be training and what should I be doing?
Can I, before you start the timer, can I ask what question we're up to?
Question seven.
Jeez.
We're flying.
Can you just say it again? Is it how much training and what kind is it?
If I'm above 50 years of age, how many times a week should I be training and what should I be doing in order to just live optimally? You know, I'm not talking about specific goals, just in general for best health. Go.
Okay, remember these are just general guidelines. This is not a program or recommend. Well, it's kind of a general broad recommendation. I think everyone over 50 should be lifting heavy things two or three times a week. You can do it more if you want. You would have to have a specific kind of split routine probably. But two or three times a week, ideally three. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 2 days off, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 2 days off, something like that. I like three. 168 hours in a week, if you get into the gym and you lift weights for 45 minutes, there's 2.25 hours out of 168, really not a massive time commitment. So weights matter. Of course, cardiovascular fitness matters, so you've got to move your body. Doesn't really matter too much as long as it's expending energy. Walking is good. Fast walking is good. You know, they've actually developed an assessment now based on how well and how quickly people walk and their stride length, which correlates with lifespan. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, when some people are not particularly healthy or fit and maybe getting on a bit, but not that old, but they walk old. You've seen that?
Yeah.
And then there are other people who are 80 and you look at the way their stride length and their posture and the way they move, it's like they're 40.
Yep.
So cardio, some light to moderate cardio most days. And that could be a gentle walk or a brisk walk through to some interval training. And again, this has got to be progressed over time. But also keep in mind, when we talk about cardio, there are a couple of other, like cardio exercise is essentially moving your body, right?
Yep.
Without the resistance component of weights, although there's a form of resistance. But so you also have to keep in mind that some people just have a really high energy life. That is, they have a lot of incidental and occupational activity. Mm-hmm. So if your natural day incorporates 15,000 steps, well, I'm not too worried about you going for a run. Mm-hmm. I'm not too worried about you getting on the exercise bike for half an hour. But if you're like me right now, which is I'm studying full-time and working full-time and sitting at a microphone often, sitting on my ass, then I have to consciously get up and go and walk because otherwise I won't be doing 10Ks a day. I'll literally be doing 500 meters.
Yep.
But if you have what we call incidental and occupational activity levels that are relatively high, then doing cardio in inverted commas is not so crucial. The other thing, of course, is just making sure we don't talk about this a lot. We don't talk about posture a lot, but training your postural muscles so that can happen, training and stretching the right postural muscles so that you don't
10 seconds.
Move, I mean this respectfully, and walk and look like an old person with that kyphotic posture.
Good. All right. There's a lot in that. That, by the way, as people are listening to this, because we are going quite quickly, they may have to just go back a few seconds and just listen to this a few times because there's a lot of quality information in a very short space of time. But that's okay. That's quality. It's density of information, isn't it?
Well, it's calorie packed. It's energy dense.
Yeah. All right. Next question. You're not going to like this one, but I'm again.
can you stop putting me in a negative space before you even ask the question?
I just know you, though. I know you. Machines versus free weights. Which is better? Go.
Bullshit. All right. Well, actually, so when we're talking about, people know. All right, so machines, it depends what we're talking about. But like some machines, like a cable crossover where the cable can be elevated and lowered, it can operate at a generally like 180-degree range. There's a lot of versatility and flexibility with that particular machine. So you can do literally hundreds of exercises. So that's a very functional thing. Then you get at the other end of the functional scale with machines, a pec deck, where essentially it's a $6,000 machine that you're doing flies on.
Yeah.
Now, I don't hate those. I use them, but it's not the most functional thing in the world because there's not a lot of bang for your buck, right? So I think about that as a former gym owner and someone who bought a shitload of equipment over the time. In terms of just what works better, well, I actually, perhaps to some people's surprise, I like some people who don't have any training background or much of a training background, who aren't strong, who aren't confident. I like them starting on machines that require far less skill and balance and coordination, because what it does, even like on a pin-loaded bench press or a pin-loaded leg press, you're still working against resistance.
Yep.
But it doesn't require balance, and it doesn't require extreme confidence or experience or skill. So the good thing about starting off doing, for example, a sitting up chest press, which is pin loaded, which is essentially a vertical bench press, or a lying down bench press pin loaded, is that it starts to condition your body to move that weight in that plane of movement without having to use your shoulder stabilizers and all of those things. So it's a good starting point.
Yep.
Over time, training in different planes of movement with kettlebells and dumbbells and barbells and all the other bits and pieces, the bits and bobs that aren't fixed to the ground, is obviously a lot more functional. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that the old school stuff, like us old dinosaur bodybuilders, I put me in that, a lot of the stuff that I did growing up was great for building muscle and giving you wider shoulders and bigger arms, but it wasn't particularly, it didn't translate to performance other than fundamental strength in a single plane of movement usually, right?
Right.
So what we want, and life operates in lots of planes and lots of ranges of movement and lots of angles, and we're generally always off balance. So it's like turning to your left and picking up your kid from the ground. You know, for some people that's going to destroy their L4 and L5, but not if you've been doing kettlebell swings and a lot of that kind of functional stuff. So both have a role is my answer. And I could have gone on for 20 minutes on that, but you cut me short.
Correct. Thank you. Good answer still, nonetheless. Hey, go on, mate. Are you sweating it up yet or are you coping beautifully?
Oh, I'll tell you what.
It's hard, isn't
it? Did you get my invoice? Because I haven't seen it. I checked the old NAB account before and nothing. So I hope that by the time we're done, that money's hit because I'm working my ass off.
Check your junk folder. It could be in your junk your spam folder.
You know, I find in my junk folder, you dickhead. That's what I find in there.
Right. Next question. Number 9. We're nearly there. Hang in there, big man. Should my teenager join a gym? Yay or nay? Go.
Well, again, let's go pros and cons, because the answer is maybe. You know, it's if your kid is an athlete or a gymnast, or of course a gymnast is an athlete, but if your kid is already physically active and in good shape and, you know, healthy and functional, then probably not. Unless they go, I really want to, well, then no harm at all. And done the right way, really good. Mm-hmm. But if your kid or at the other end of the scale, if your child is not particularly athletic and they're not super healthy, or, and again, we're not talking about ego or Instagram or body fat percentage. We're talking about wellness. We're talking about health. then definitely it can be good for your child to train in an environment with a structured program and people that support him or her. So, you know, and despite what some people think, children can actually train. I'm not talking about 8-year-olds. I'm talking about 14, 15, 16-year-olds. You did say teenagers, didn't you?
Teenagers. So I was kind of, when I wrote the question, I was thinking around 15 and up.
Yeah. So, you know, despite what some people say, kids can train hard. Kids train hard anyway. Like, have you ever seen a gymnast? Have you ever seen an elite swimmer? Have you ever seen, you know, elite basketballers, netballers, footballers? They get absolutely flogged. Or even 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds on trees or monkey bars where they're literally lifting their own body weight. You know, people go, oh, they shouldn't lift anything more than 4 kilos. Well, when that 8-year-old girl is swinging on the monkey bars, she's lifting 30 kilos or 35 kilos, depending on what her body weight is. So, of course, it needs to be done methodically and intelligently, but
sure,
kids can actually train quite safely, in my opinion, as long as it's executed the right way.
Okay. Well, you nailed that one in 2 minutes and 5 seconds. Yeah. Okay, good. All right, last question, and we might even have a little bit of, you know, free time at the end for anything else.
Oh, really?
You're nearly gone.
I just checked. The money's not there.
Last question. Does intermittent fasting work for all ages and populations? Or let's say all ages. What's your opinion on that? Who should?
All right, keep in mind. I'm not a dietitian. Yeah. Keep in mind I'm not a dietitian.
No.
This is just an opinion. Look, I actually think this is just my instinct and my experience. So I do a weird version of intermittent fasting. So most people, they do something like they eat their last meal at whatever, 7 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and then they don't eat till, you know, whatever, midday or 1 o'clock the next day. So they essentially have 16 hours of not eating. I think very typically is 16 hours of no food and 8 hours of food. And
yep,
anecdotally, lots of people get good results with that.
Yep.
And I think that what we need to keep, and I don't want to digress from your question. So I think for the most part, it's not a bad way to eat for many people is my answer. Mm-hmm. I don't eat lunch anymore. I eat breakfast. I eat breakfast at about 7:30. And then I eat dinner at about 6:37. So I have literally kind of at the halfway point of each day on the 12 hour, I have a meal and then 12 hours later, another meal, but I only have 2 a day. And the reason that I do that is not because I read something or heard something. It's because interestingly, when COVID hit last year, I was moving less than ever because now I'm doing my study at home, my PhD at home, I'm doing my work at home, I'm doing speaking gigs from this studio, I'm not traveling, I'm not in a gym, my incidental and occupational activity fell through the floor and I gained some weight. I wasn't huge, but I gained 4 or 5 kilos, and on my body that's really noticeable. And I went, well, fuck it, I'm just going to skip lunch for a week or two and see if I can rectify that and move. And what the unexpected benefit for me was, when I would get to 2, 3, 4 in the afternoon, where I would often hit the energy wall and my brain's like, nah, let's go have a snoozy snooze, right?
Yeah.
I felt great, like cognitively, emotionally, energetically, I felt sharp. And I remember on the first day of not eating lunch, and you know when you kind of fully commit to something, you just put it off the table. So I found it quite easily, easy.
Yep.
And I did it, and then the next day I did it, and then I started to realize, wow, I'm not having the mid-afternoon dips that I used to have post-lunch.
Yep.
And so my advice to people with food is, apart from trying to manage the emotional stuff and the social stuff and the irrational stuff, is do a bit of experimenting.
Mm.
You know, just see how your body – it's like some people can drink all the milk they want. Some people can't have half a cup.
Yeah.
They're for the next 5 hours, right? Some people eat fish and it works well. Some people, you know, it's like there is no set protocol for food.
Mm-hmm.
So and all of this is about, and I know I'm over time, is about, you know, trying to figure out what works best for us. But intermittent fasting, for many people, just because I think we're chucking less food in, I think it can be a good thing.
Cool. Beautiful. Okay, well, that's the end of your 10 questions. We've covered a bit of turf. We've done well. You've done well. I've said five words, but you've done beautifully. You've carried the episode, mate, on your shoulders.
Well, you did give me 3 minutes to talk nonstop. So did I pass?
Yeah, you passed easily. You smashed it.
Oh, good. Thank goodness. But you know, I'm insecure and I need affirmation.
I put this episode together for two reasons. One is because I just knew you'd have good answers to all of those questions. But also, too, it was hard at times for you to answer the question to your level of satisfaction because, as you said in a lot of the answers, it depends. And that's what I think the summary to what I would add to all of this is it's very rare that there's one simple, straightforward, concrete answer to these types of questions because in most situations we're dealing with human bodies, as you know, we all respond differently, react differently and are stimulated differently. It depends. The answer is it depends.
That should be the name. That should be the title of the show. You should just call it It Depends and then explain that in the overview because it does. I mean, and this is one of the challenges in this health wellness space and even in the psychology space, mental, emotional health space, understandably, people want an answer. What's the answer? How much water should I drink every day, Harps? I go, well, it depends. Are you sitting on your ass or are you running in the sun? You know, do you weigh 60 kilos or 90 kilos? Because that makes a big difference. Do you have a diet that's high in water content? Do you eat lots of fruits, lots of salad, lots of veggies? Because if you do, you need to drink less water than the bloke who lives on fucking, you know, Doritos, right? So and that's the thing is that we need to get this thing out of our head that there is a one diet, one program, one pill, one powder, one potion strategy that works for all. And that's why I'm passionate about people educating themselves. Like you don't need to be an exercise, whatever, physiologist, nutritionist, neurosurgeon, but you know, learn what macro and micronutrients are. Learn what these things do. If you want to know what those preservatives 951950955 do, just go Google. And by the way, in almost every artificially sweetened drink, read the potential side of it. All you got to do is Google it.
Yep.
You just learn something.
Yep.
You know, the other day I was listening to, I was going to bed. I don't watch much telly, but I put on the telly while I'm going to bed, which I know is meant to be a bad idea, but that whole don't have screen time before sleep. Yeah. My body doesn't know that rule because I can fall into a coma while looking at a screen. But anyway, you know, and this neuroscientist from Sydney was talking about the fact that there's no color in the world. There are just surfaces that reflect or absorb more light. They reflect more light, and so black absorbs all the light. White reflects all the light, and so we see. So, color is actually a byproduct of our brain and our optical nerves, and these things called cones and rods. And I went, "That's fucking fascinating. I don't know anything about that." So yesterday, I went down a 30-minute internet rabbit hole of how color works. Right?
Yep.
And not that I'm an expert now, but I know this shit that for 57 years I haven't known. And it's like you go, okay, Google it or go to Google Scholar or go to, you know, there are lots of academic websites that the general public can access. There are lots of research journals, but moreover, Your Honor, there's just really readable stuff that's pretty high-level science that we can learn about.
And
when it comes to managing your body, why would you want to totally rely on anyone?
Yeah.
And you've got to remember that even someone like Russ, who's got a master's degree and has trained thousands of people and worked with elite sporting teams and, you know, the best athletes in Australia and AIS athletes and all that stuff, even when Russ writes a program or I write a program, I give advice, we're guessing. Mm-hmm. It's a very educated guess, but it's a guess because we don't know exactly how that individual or their body, not the same thing, by the way, the individual or their body will respond to that particular stimulus. So what we do is based on lots of education, training, knowledge, observing, experience, understanding, We make our best guess and then we go, let's try this and see how your body responds. And that's really, you know, there's no reason why we can't train ourselves about our own body in that way.
Exactly. And that's probably the thing that most people need to be concerned about is what works for you. Don't worry about what works for your your mate or your neighbor or your cousin or whatever else. Don't worry too much about what, you know, what their program looks like or what work out and worry more about what works for you.
What's your body telling you?
The You Project, your podcast is over 550 odd episodes now?
Yep. 500. Yep. Yep. Lots of episodes. So definitely don't start at number one.
In the last 6 months, have you got like two or three favorite episodes that you've done that just blew you away, or is that too hard to remember?
That's really hard. Like what I think is the best thing, like for example, this morning I interviewed a lady called Elizabeth Lesser. Now, I know you're not a particularly spiritual dude, but maybe you are under that. But like, for example, this lady, she's worked with Deepak Chopra, with the Dalai Lama, with Eckhart Tolle. Mm. She's been on Oprah 20 plus times. And I thought, you know, when you're interviewing someone like that, and not only that, she's not just this spiritual kind of font of information, but also psychology and emotion and human behavior. And she's such a sweetheart, right? And she's such an awesome human that I'm like, I actually feel, sounds cliche and a bit cheesy, but I feel really privileged being able to, genuinely feel privileged being able to talk to these people. Because I'm talking to people every day who are smarter than me, definitely smarter than me with other things, right? Have got insights, experience, understanding, awareness that I don't have.
Yeah.
And to be able to, like, there's no way in the world I could get to talk to this lady without having a vehicle that is the You Project, right? Yeah. So it just opens up, like, I'm having a one-hour conversation. So there's lots of... And it's, I mean, you talk to some, apart from me, let's call me the low light of the bloody stable, but you talk to lots of awesome people as well. And, you know, for me, it's just a gift. So, but if you're going to have a look at the You Project, just literally just scroll back and see who interests you. I spoke to a bloke the other day, wasn't mind blowing, but it was interesting, who went to Antarctica in 2019 to lead an expedition to be a station manager in Antarctica for research and all that. 34 years old, ex-soldier, 12-month thing, COVID happened, stayed there for nearly 2 years with 1 year's worth of supplies.
Oh, yeah. God. By himself?
Well, a bit more. No, him and a team.
Right.
A team of about 90.
Jesus.
And you go, oh, yeah. So what's it like living in Antarctica in a, you know, so it's just like just shit you never think about. I'm like, that is really interesting. Like, okay, and what about dynamics? And was there any bed jumping? Was there like, what's going on there? And what about fresh food? And what about, how could you work out? And how cold, you know, like he goes, well, you could literally walk outside with a pot of boiling water, throw it in the sky and it freezes in the sky and hits the ground hard.
Oh.
So you throw up this pot of boiling water, it freezes before it hits the earth, and it hits the earth and breaks up in a solid.
Oh, no.
That's how fucking cold it is.
That's and crazy.
This is how hardcore they are. They go and cut a 4-meter by 3-meter hole in the ice, and someone's job is to keep stirring it, otherwise it'll freeze over.
Yeah.
And then they all go for a swim.
Oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
No.
And it's
Yeah.
That's right. I'm like, yeah, that's not tough. That's fucking stupid. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, great conversations, but have a listen if you want.
Oh, we will. We'll get people over there. Mate, thanks for allowing me to put you under immense pressure for the last 40-odd minutes. I appreciate it. Next time I contact you and say, let's do a podcast, you'll probably run a mile, eh?
I probably won't answer, let's be honest.
And the invoice is on its way.
Yeah. No. I've sent the invoice. I want the money. See you, mate.
See you, mate. Bye. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'd appreciate it greatly if you would follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook the Australian Fitness Podcast. If you would like to reach out to me for professional services or to know more about my background, visit www.russelljarrett.com.au. And you can also follow me on Instagram at russell_jarrett1. If you have any questions or feedback, feel free to email us at info@australianfitnesspodcast.com.au. If you have any ideas for guests that you would feel would be valuable to our listeners, let us know. Currently, Australian Fitness Podcast doesn't have a sponsor. If you think your product or service would be a good match for the show, reach out to us. Thanks, and we'll see you soon.